This chapter was taken from the Food and Feelings Workbook, written by Karen R. Koenig, Chapter 6, titled Shame. Shame. I'm reading this chapter under the covers. When it comes to emotions, shame is one of the big shots. There is nothing subtle or vague about it. It slams into you like a speeding locomotive. Shame is a ferocious, overwhelming, debilitating emotion that implies gravest wrongdoing and transgression beyond redemption. When you're ashamed, you want to vaporize your subhuman self on the spot, or at the very least, crawl under a rock and never come out. Many people confuse shame with embarrassment and guilt, using the terms interchangeably. Unfortunately, this does justice to none of them. Think of shame, embarrassment, and guilt not as identical, but as distant cousins. Guilt, you may remember, is a failure to live up to your own standards. Embarrassment is a momentary awkwardness, self-consciousness, or uneasiness. Characterized by its transitory nature, it implies a gaffe or goof, a lapse of judgment, a simple blunder, a faux pas you may be able to smile at down the road, or perhaps even joke about it with shame, with close friends. Shame goes deeper. Far deeper. You may eventually neutralize its sting, but it's doubtful that you'll ever have a giggle over what happened. More likely, you'll try to avoid public exposure of your act at all costs. In fact, because of its cringe potential, the word shame rarely crops up except in clinical circles. I'm embarrassed is often inaccurately substitute for I'm ashamed, because it sounds and feels so much better. However, minimizing feelings for comfort's sake only promotes the false impression that they hold some sort of power over you. Name them exactly for what they are, and you gain power over them. How do I know if I'm feeling shame? When you can't shake the feelings that you've done something horribly, unforgivably, unequivocally wrong, and that you are surely the worst person on earth because of it, shame is paying you a visit. You may flush deeply or feel any of the following. A prickly, hot sensation coursing through your extremities, sick to your stomach, or as if you've been punched in the solar plexus. You might feel repulsed by yourself, literally, sick of you. Shame is that stone in your gut that won't dissolve, striking at the very core of esteem, as you shudder. I did that? When you're ashamed, you feel dirty or soiled, as if no amount of washing could make you clean. Stop and feel. How does the subject of shame make you uncomfortable? Practice exercise. Shame versus embarrassment. Purpose: to distinguish shame from embarrassment. Rationale: shame is so often confused with embarrassment that it's vital to understand the difference. What you need? Memories. Directions: think of an incident in which you considered yourself embarrassed. Reflecting on it, are you sure you felt embarrassment? Now think of a time when you felt deeply ashamed, and compare the two effects. Call them up in detail so that you can re-experience the differences. Now, move on to identify times you thought you were embarrassed when you were actually ashamed. Please record your embarrassing incident. How did you know you were embarrassed and not ashamed? And then record a shameful incident. How did you know you were ashamed and not embarrassed? Reflection to be done after completion of exercise. Could you distinguish shame from embarrassment, or did they seem identical? If you had difficulty, try describing each emotion in your own words and repeat the exercise. Did merely evoking shame cause such discomfort that you had a hard time staying focused on it? What's the difference between guilt and shame? Much has been written about the similarities and differences between guilt and shame. It's said that guilt is about what we do, and shame is about who we are. That guilt is wrong behavior, and shame is a wrongness within us. That guilt is the perception that we've made a mistake or failed, while shame is the perception that we are mistakes or failures. Guilt presumes a wrong can be righted, and offers an opportunity for redemption, prodding us to reach out, make amends, and set things straight. Think about how it lessens when, for instance, you call back your boss and offer to go into the office, though you plan to work from home, or when you run after a friend shouting, "I'm so sorry, I didn't mean it." Guilt offers the hope of undoing and forgiveness. With shame, however, there is no hope, no brighter future. What's done is done. You feel as if you can never make things right, no matter what you do. Unlike guilt, shame doesn't come with an eraser. Stop and feel. Does your discomfort with shame drive you to focus on food? Does your dysfunctional eating cause you shame? What is the purpose of shame? Shame stems from the belief that you have not merely done a bad thing, but that you are a bad person. Although it's hard to believe that an emotion so wounding and devastating has a purpose, it does. Precisely because of its potency, shame is a useful governing tool to prod you in what society perceives as the right direction. Like guilt, its essential purpose is to warn you that you've missed the mark, fallen short of an expectation, stepped outside convention or the law, or behaved badly. For example, if you promised to pick up your spouse's dry cleaning on the way home from work and it slipped your mind, you might feel a twinge of guilt. Reflecting a bit more, you might feel a stab of shame as you realize that your so-called forgetfulness stemmed from how angry you still are at your spouse from an argument you had the night before. You can let go of your guilt by returning to pick up the dry cleaning, but facing the shameful fact that you are being vindictive and mean might be more difficult. It sounds like a paradox, but we might say that the awfulness of shame is intended to ensure that we do things to make ourselves proud. The point being that we often choose to do things right solely because we want to avoid how it feels to slink off with our tail between our legs. Think about it. When you do things you're ashamed of, you generally feel badly about yourself. And when you do things you're proud of, you feel good. Because of its toxicity, shame surely is a powerhouse of a motivator. Stop and feel. What are you feeling right now? Practice exercise. Shame versus guilt. Purpose: to distinguish shame from guilt. Rationale: to get the most from your emotions, it's essential to be able to recognize when you are feeling shame and when you are feeling guilt. What you need? A pen. Directions: in the appropriate columns that follow, list the things you feel ashamed of or guilty about. For instance, you might feel ashamed that you didn't go to college, but not guilty. Or you might feel guilty that you missed your grandson's birthday, but not ashamed. Keep adding to the list until you can distinguish guilt from shame. Reflection, to be done after completion of exercise. Could you distinguish shame and guilt easily? Which is the more troubling emotion? What could you do to make it less difficult and more bearable? Can people make me feel ashamed? As with guilt or any other emotion, no one can make you feel ashamed. Of course, this doesn't mean that people won't try to discredit or humiliate you the same way they try to guilt trip you. Think of yourself as Teflon coated. No one can make anything stick to you unless you allow it. Assuming that you're honest with yourself, a crucial assumption, are you? As a mature individual with full cognitive capacities, you can judge your behavior and don't need to take anyone else's judgments as truth. When deciding if you're feeling shame, it's important to examine the context of the situation. For example, something said may elicit shame in one circumstance, but not in another. Let's say you're out to dinner with your best friend who knows you have to take off your shoes and socks to do any kind of arithmetic. When the waiter drops the bill in front of you, she might joke, "Okay, Einstein, hand it over," as she grabs for the check. Now let's imagine that you're at a meeting with your boss and a brand new client when your boss hands you your client's quarterly financial statement and asks you a question about revenues. You're so nervous for a moment that you can't speak and start to stutter, so she quips, "Okay, Einstein, hand it over," as she swipes the statement out of your hand. Same message, different context. No one can evaluate you like you, as long as you can be honest with yourself. If you're an emotionally healthy person, you should be able to scrutinize yourself and recognize that you have strengths and weaknesses. You know that you're not perfect and never will be, and that neither is anyone else. You recognize that you're a worthy individual no matter how much or how little you accomplish in life, or how many mistakes you make. When you do something that lives up to your expectations, you feel proud. When you fail to live up to your expectations, you feel shame. If you're going to feel shame, make sure it's the real deal, and that you're not buying into it just because someone wants to shame you. Where does shame come from? Healthy shame comes from healthy families. Well-balanced parents recognize both their strengths and weaknesses and view their children's behavior with reasonable objectivity. Healthy spouses work on taking responsibility for their mistakes and don't habitually play the blame game. They model healthy shame by being accountable for their behavior and teaching their children to do the same, neither protecting them from feeling appropriately bad nor making excuses when they're at fault. If you grew up in this type of family, consider yourself lucky. In a functional family, shame stings a little to encourage you to become a better person, but the feeling is neither overwhelming nor unbearable. You're brought up to learn from mistakes, then let them go. No one is stuck in shame mode all the time or in a pattern of shame-based behavior such as addictions or abuse. Shame does its job to get you to look honestly at yourself and mend your ways, then take a hike. However, what do you do if, as a child, your parents and other relatives regularly humiliate you for your shortcomings, make fun of your mistakes, or put you down for your failures? The normal reaction to this kind of ongoing humiliation and debasement is to believe that there is something drastically wrong with you. From that sense of unfixable defectiveness is born a bad case of lifelong shame. When you're regularly degraded, teased, or demeaned as a child, or as an adult for that matter, you might lump your wounding into one feeling: bad. The word functions on two levels, as a mood descriptor and an assessor of self-worth. Whether the underlying belief causes you to feel rotten, or whether feeling rotten grinds you into believing that you're worth nothing, bad is the word that aptly describes exactly how you feel when you're engulfed in shame. And so you wrongly assume, because I feel bad, I must be bad. Even if you were a basically decent kid and tried hard to please your parents, if they frequently degraded and devalued you, especially if they implied you were never good enough, you're likely to grow up feeling a deep-seated sense of inadequacy and failure. Likewise, if your parents were chock-full of shame and couldn't tolerate their own insecurities, they very well likely projected their shame onto you. This means they infused you with it instead of feeling it themselves, also known as the "it can't possibly be me, so it's gotta be you" mentality. However, not all children in a family bear the brunt of shame equally. I've known families where there was equal opportunity abuse, in which every child received their share of verbal put-downs and a constant barrage of unwarranted blame. I've also come across families where one child was unconsciously singled out to be what's called the symptom bearer. For complex reasons that don't necessarily have anything to do with reality, this particular child gets identified early on as the family scapegoat and suffers the most. The scapegoat or symptom bearer is the one on whom everyone else projects or dumps their worst feels and feelings about themselves, which, you guessed it, mostly consists of shame. That way, only one person in the family is left metaphorically holding the garbage, and everyone else can feel squeaky clean. Being the scapegoat is a shame-based family is one of the worst things that can happen to a child. If you were one, you had to manage everyone else's shame on top of your own. Having no idea that you were the household dirtbag, you internalize every cruel comment as if it were truth, and then one of two things happened. Either you believed you were worthless, gave up, and became an underachiever or life dropout, or you took your parents' condemnation as a challenge and have spent your whole life defiantly trying to prove them wrong through overachievement and perfectionism. Both reactions are unhealthy and based on your inability to shake off unjustified and undeserved childhood shame. In another kind of unhealthy family, parents are afraid to allow their children to feel shame and bend over backwards to protect them from it. Though it's understandable that parents would try to minimize their children's emotional pain, this kind of sheltering nearly always backfires because overprotected children end up believing that shame is too unbearable to tolerate. In fact, no matter how hard parents try to shield them, children often feel ashamed anyway. More often than not, they wind up feeling doubtfully ashamed for whatever they did and because they think they're not capable of tolerating warranted blame. When we don't know how to bear shame, we can't take responsibility for ourselves, fix our broken parts, fit into society, or bounce back from failure. If your parents did everything in their power to prevent you from feeling this emotion, took the blame for your misdeeds, minimized your failures, ignored your mistakes, faulted other people for your wrongdoings, they did you a grave disservice because you have to learn how to tolerate and deal with shame in order to be a healthy, well-balanced individual and to end dysfunctional eating. Stop and feel. What feelings are getting stirred up as you think about how your family handled blame and shame? Practice exercise. Pin the tail on the donkey. Purpose, to understand how shame got assigned and displaced in your family of origin. Rationale, to only carry on your own shame and not someone else's. We need to understand how shame got played out in the dynamics of our family of origin. What you need, two different color crayons, pen. Format, need a page or half page with about six stick figures with lines under them for names. Directions, think about the dynamics in your family of origin. Was there a scapegoat, a donkey that everyone tried to pin something on? Was that person you, a brother or sister, or one of your parents? On the line under each stick figure below, write the name of each member of your family, including anyone who lived with you. Under that, pick one color crayon and write what they got blamed for, what they should have. Say, your brother truly was never on time, or your dad really was a terrible driver. Under that, using a different color, write what they got blamed for, what they shouldn't have. Say your sister is smart, but was told she was stupid, or your disabled grandmother got blamed for using up the family's money. Reflection, to be done after completion of exercise. This can be a painful exercise because it entails getting in touch with the shame that existed in your family of origin. Could you identify a scapegoat in your family? Can you distinguish between who deserved blame and who received it? If you're uncomfortable thinking about these issues, take a few deep breaths until you're feeling better, then return to the exercise. Beliefs about shame. Because rational thinking leads to rational behavior, it's essential that you build a belief system that's sound and healthy. Here are examples of irrational thoughts turned into rational ones. Irrational: people can make me feel ashamed. Rational: no one can make me feel ashamed. Only I can make myself feel ashamed. Irrational: I can't bear feeling ashamed. Rational: I can bear feeling ashamed and any other feeling I have. Irrational: shame means I must have done something terrible. Rational: shame means I feel badly about something I've done. Irrational: I should be ashamed of my overeating or undereating. I feel proud that I'm working on improving my relationship with food. Undereating or overeating are not shameful behaviors. Irrational: I should be ashamed of my weight and my body. Rational: no matter what size I am, I feel good about my body. I can work on changing my weight without being ashamed of it. Now it's your turn to transform your irrational beliefs into sound, functional ones. Take your time and make sure each new rational belief feels right for you. They should be concrete and written in the present tense using an active verb. Feel free to use the list above, but make sure you come up with some of your own as well. What does shame-based behavior mean? Shame-based behavior is that which chronically leaves you feeling ashamed or which should leave you feeling ashamed. Getting tipsy one night and flirting with your husband's boss at a retirement party may give you a pinprick of shame when you sober up. Getting drunk and openly flirting with every man except your husband at every social occasion is a shame-based behavior. Blowing up at your roommate for not tidying up his mess may make you cringe when you think about it the next day. Blaming your roommate for every problem in your life is shame-based behavior. In another kind of shame-based behavior, strange as it sounds, you live your life in such a way that you chronically or frequently end up with shameful feelings. That is, you make poor choices unconsciously because you truly believe that you don't deserve to feel proud of yourself and because that feeling is familiar from childhood. If you're engaged in this kind of recurring behavior, you most likely had a childhood that was filled with pervasive negativity and are so used to feeling ashamed that it's uncomfortable to feel good about or proud of yourself. Shame-based behavior includes a pattern of any of the following: antisocial acts which may or may not lead you to court or jail, excessive drinking, drugging, gambling, working, shopping, eating, or exercising, being verbally, emotionally, physically, or sexually abusive, taking unnecessary risks, including acting out sexually, physically, or financially, secretly doing things you know are not in your best interest, and regularly depriving yourself of things you love. You know a behavior is shame-based because deep down inside, no matter how much you try to deny it or convince yourself otherwise, you don't feel proud. Shame-based behavior has you constantly trying to convince or assure yourself or others that what you're doing is just fine. It's often couched in terms of, I know I shouldn't, but. Doing something you know is wrong is a surefire way to stoke the shame flame. Shame-based behavior happens when you are doing well but chronically sabotage your success. Ignore the advice of healthy people whom you trust and engage in a relationship or activity that has a high risk of hurting you. Consistently taking risky or self-harming actions and try to hide or deny them. Regularly neglect your health and don't take good care of body, mind, and spirit. Habitually act on impulse with slight or no regard for consequences. If you want to reduce shame, you will need to start thinking about the consequences of your actions. If you determine that behaving in a certain way will make you feel good about yourself, then that's what you need to do. If the behavior will bring you shame, then it's definitely the wrong choice. If you want to feel proud, you have to build your self-worth, not tear it down. One of the best ways to develop high self-esteem and sound self-worth is to make conscious, intentional choices that you know are in your long-term best interest. Stop and feel. Are you feeling ashamed of any behaviors right now? How does feeling shame drive me to focus on food and weight? Because shame may feel unbearable at times, it's a highly challenging emotion, truly one of the most abrasive to our sensitive souls. If you're not used to sitting with such intense discomfort, you may use a food or weight obsession to minimize or avoid the shame as something that happened recently or long ago. The irony is that if you eat when you're not hungry, don't eat when you are, or eat past fullness or satisfaction, or don't regularly feed yourself with nourishment and pleasure in mind, you and I both know exactly how you're going to end up feeling. Ashamed. So it's important to recognize that disordered eating serves a dual purpose. It both alleviates and perpetuates shame. Moreover, you inadvertently double your dose of discomfort by using food inappropriately to avoid whatever shame you felt initially. If you're prone to shame-based behavior, using food in an unhealthy way may be your least shameful pattern. Alternately, your food abuse may be your only shame-based activity, the place where you dump all your bad feelings about who you think you are. Or you may expect so much of yourself in most areas of your life that eating is the only way in which you let yourself go. What all your behaviors have in common, though, is that they destroy feelings of self-love and self-worth. Rigid or highly controlled eating on a regular basis also stems from shame, or more precisely, an intense fear of it. Restrictive eaters keep themselves on a short leash around food because they're scared that once they get started, they'll never stop, which of course would generate enormous shame for them. Remember when I said that growing up in a family in which parents projected their shame onto their children may produce individuals who are overachievers and perfectionists. If you're one of these people, you may micromanage your diet to prove yourself that you're tough, in control of excess, in charge of your life, and self-disciplined. The sad truth is that you really don't trust your ability to regulate yourself, and so you put all your energy into artificial, excessive control. Desperate to believe you have the right stuff, you try to distance yourself from any normal imperfection. Denial of nourishment and sensory delight is your way of reassuring yourself that you've conquered what seems like a shameful desire for food. Sadly, you replace shame not with real pride, but with false pride. The likelihood is that your perfectionism is motivated by the irrational belief that if I'm perfect, I'll never have to feel shame. Unfortunately, perfectionism feeds on itself. The more you fear the shame of imperfection, that is, vulnerability, emotion, excess, the more perfect you have to be. If you tend toward being a perfectionist, it's important to have areas in your life in which you give yourself permission to make a mess because, well, life is messy. By giving yourself the go-ahead to indulge, you eliminate the assumption that you're doing something wrong. You could also refuse to feel badly about yourself even when you overeat or withdraw from food and decide, instead, to love yourself no matter what. You could do as I do and have at least one or two big messy piles in an otherwise neat home. They remind me that I'm human and perfectly imperfect. When they get so big that you're about to topple over, I go on a filing frenzy, then promptly start a new mess the next day. Secretive eating or concealing destructive eating behaviors is always shame-based. Shame thrives on secrecy, which means keeping information hidden from ourselves and others. Think about it. The rest of the family is watching TV in the family room, and you're locked in the bathroom, downing a pint of mocha chip ice cream, terrified of being found out. Or you tell your family you have to work to do during dinner and take your food to your room or study, knowing full well that behind closed doors, it'll all go in the trash. Can you see how you double your shame by eating in the bathroom or tossing out your food in private? You may feel as if you're protecting yourself from prying eyes, but what you're doing is reinforcing unhealthy behavior. You'd actually be better off if you felt guilt rather than shame over either behavior, because guilt says that you don't like what you're doing and correct it, while shame says nothing can make up for the awful person you believe yourself to be. The goal is to work toward moving all of your eating out into the open, which announces, I may not be doing something that's healthy for me, but I'm not going to hide as if I'm a criminal. I'm going to try to understand this behavior and recognize it as shame-based. When you use food in ways that make you unhappy, you can always make the choice to view your behavior neutrally. You may still wish you had acted differently, but you don't have to worsen your situation by self-shaming. Reacting neutrally to your actions may not take away all of your shame, but it will certainly increase your pride. Shame is a very, very tough emotion to experience and handle. The best way to detoxify it is through compassion for self, acceptance of all of your behaviors, believing that you're doing the best you can, remaining curious about your motivation, and trying to do better next time. If you can understand your behavior as opposing to vilifying yourself for it, you have a good shot at changing it. And when your actions around food become healthier, you'll feel less shame. You may still have to learn to tolerate this bear of an emotion, but at least you won't be using food to make yourself feel worse. Further exploration. 1. How do you know when you're feeling ashamed? 2. What is the difference between shame and embarrassment? 3. What is the difference between guilt and shame? 4. What is the purpose of healthy shame? 5. Why can't people make you feel ashamed? 6. How does your perfectionism feed into shame? 7. How does your experience with shame as a child affect your ability to tolerate or bear shame today? 8. How did each of your parents manage shame? 9. How would you describe shame-based behaviors, and which ones do you engage in? 10. How did your parents' shame-based behaviors influence you? 11. How does eating or rigidly controlling your food intake contribute to your shame? 12. What are 3 effective things you can do to detoxify your shame? Take some time to complete these exploration questions. That concludes this chapter. Thank you for listening.